Welcome to the Legacy and Faith Show, featuring estate and tax attorney Paul Grant. The Legacy and Faith Show is about the journey of discovering how to create plans that protect wealth and family values for generations. And now the host of the Legacy and Faith Show, Paul Grant.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, another edition of the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant. And wrapping up an interesting series we started a while back called How to Deal with the Disability and Incapacity that you might experience, maybe someone in your family does. We went all through that, Paul, and this week you want to talk about how does a trust help with this?
Yeah, it's for me, it's a very interesting topic. It's actually one of the more necessary topics, as we have talked about in several different iterations of this series. Our health is expanding. So in other words, our life cycle is expanding, but it doesn't mean that the quality of life is better, specifically towards the end of our lifetime. So medical technology is keeping us alive more, but typically when you have health incidences, you don't recover to the same level. And so what we're finding in society is that more and more people need assistance. And that's kind of my definition of disability. You need help one way or the other, whether it's at the time that you have a health incident, whether you are beginning to have mental incapacitation issues or memory issues. So this is becoming a very, very large part of our society. We're staying alive longer,
yes,
which means that we have greater risk or greater opportunities, greater percentages, whatever word you want to throw in there, that there is going to be a time when we need assistance. Statistically, even 20 years ago, if someone lived to be 65 years old, they had a 75% chance of needing help at one time or another just by living out the normal course of their life. And so if medical technology now is keeping us alive, but not necessarily restoring the quality of our life, then I think that those statistics are increasing.
Yeah.
Are we at 80%? Are we at 85%? I don't know. But the reality is, as much or as difficult as it is to talk about this issue, because how many of us want to sit around at Thanksgiving and talk about, hey, if I become incapacitated, these are my desires? Unfortunately, only my family has to listen to that. But but it is the reality that what I have seen over and over and over, and this is why I have spent so much time on this topic and why I wanted to really hit this topic in successive order and why we're going to talk about it again today. If you have the conversations with your family, if you have the proper documentation, if you have had the proper conversations with your attorney, and if you feel prepared that there has been someone to guide you through the decisions, then it is a far easier transition for you and for your family should you come at a time and place where you need assistance. The difficult scenarios are when you have not talked about this. The difficult times is when you don't have your documents prepared, when you haven't done your proper estate planning. Then insecurity abounds because you walk into a situation knowing that you haven't talked to anybody, you don't have your documents. So the future is extremely scary. It's very scary. And so this series is really important to me because we believe at Planning with Purpose that we actually take a lot of time and talk about this issue. I was just reviewing an estate plan that came from somebody else, and it was actually a trust that was very well done, which if you've listened to me at any point in time, you don't hear me say very often. And so the trust itself did a good job with the tax language, with being specific to the family, with passing and creating appropriate protections inside the trust. But yet, it still did nothing more than address that if a doctor deems you to be incapacitated, or if a doctor examines you and determines that you cannot manage your financial affairs, then you are deemed incapacitated, and therefore we are still at a doctor-driven system. And so with today's last show, I really want to compare the differences between what a trust does, what a power of attorney does.
Okay.
And so that's kind of where we're at today, is what can a trust do differently than what a power of attorney does? Or let me phrase it this way. What can a trust do when it's properly done and when you have the right attorney who takes the requisite time to actually do this portion of the estate plan?
Yeah, because I don't normally associate a trust with helping you kind of in this life. It's more when you're gone and
Correct.
Helping your family. So this is an intriguing idea. So what can a trust do?
Yeah, and I think that thought process, Mark, is very, very common, which is, well, the trust holds stuff, and so it helps control the kids. If you have a special needs child, if you have someone who is not healthy, if you have an heir that is a spendthrift and just there's no way they can manage money, those are the inclinations of what a trust does. But yet, a trust should be designed to ensure your safety first. So, from the creator's perspective, we call him the trust maker, the trustor, the creator. So, if you do estate planning and you develop a trust, the trust should first look at ensuring your safety. So how is it different? Well, let me review that a financial power of attorney, a healthcare power of attorney, what they do is they give power to somebody to simply have access to your account. So if we talk about a financial power of attorney, it's access to accounts. It's someone who has the ability to go to the bank, show the piece of paper, and say, I have a legal right to get in and manage this money, to write checks, to pay the bills, and to simply take it out, and you don't get to ask me any more questions. We're done. Now, a power of attorney, what the law says is that you are supposed to, the agent, the one who has the authority, is supposed to use it in your best interest. And really, there's a period there, is that we're supposed to use it for your best interest and we're done. And so what I have found is that the accountability wanes. Who's watching the agent? Who has the right to come and demand accounting? If one child has the agency and the others do not, then insecurity often abounds with the family. But if you have multiple agents, then it can create hassles. What if those kids don't see eye to eye because your kids have never seen eye to eye on anything? So why now are they going to see eye to eye on how to care for and or manage money when they haven't managed money the same way throughout their lifetime? Administratively, what if we need two signatures on things? How much more difficult is that? So typically, I am against having multiple agents. Typically, I'm against it. So in a power of attorney, all we're doing is we're granting access, and there's very little follow-up. So let's compare that then with a trust. And a trust has different duties involved in it. Number one is that a trust has an investment duty where a power of attorney does not. So in a trust, you have a duty to continue to invest the assets as they have been invested in the past, or in a manner that has been clearly communicated by the trust maker. So we can add information into the trust that says, I invest like this, or I utilize the services of trusted individuals who have been my guides, who have been assisting me over a period of years, sometimes 20 and 30 years, you've had a financial advisor, and they know which direction your finances have been going, and they know the critical why. So what I have seen oftentimes is with a power of attorney, well-meaning kids come in and now they need to assist mom and dad. So what they do is they take all the parents' finances and they say, for convenience, and because I have a relationship with this individual, I'm going to take all the finances from mom and dad's financial advisor that this person knows mom and dad. They've been involved with mom and dad. But for my convenience now, because look, it's difficult to assist people in an agency capacity. Sure. So for my convenience, I am going to now take all of the finances away from the trusted advisor that my parents had and bring them to my trusted advisor. Well, what's the problem with that story? Well, number one, there's a convenience for the child. That could be a good thing. But we just lost the voice of a trusted individual who may have the history of why you invested like you invested, your goals, your passions, your dreams, who have set things up, who may know fragments of where other assets are, that we lose all of that voice into a new advisor who doesn't have that background. Mm. Well, they may know about the child, but they don't know about the parent. So I'm always concerned when new advisors are brought into the picture. I'm not saying it's always bad. I'm just saying I'm concerned. And what a trust can do that a power of attorney, at least I've never seen a power of attorney do this, is that in a trust model, we can say, these are the individuals that I trust. And if someone else comes along as a successor trustee, because it's not an agent, it's called a successor trustee, I want you to get the input and the advice and the wisdom of these individuals who have been with me on this journey of building my finances, who understand who I am and understand the why I have invested like I have invested. And so now we have actually a duty to stay connected. Now, it may not mean that they have all the finances. Again, there's practical ways that we can assist the typically a child to make it as easy as possible to manage all these things. But now we have a different picture. We have a different support system within the trust that has never existed in a financial power of attorney because, again, the financial power of attorney is simply a you have access document, and a trust should be used. It is rarely used, but it should be used as an instruction mechanism to say this is what I want done if someone is watching over my finances. So there's one of the one difference in that alone. And so, and then one other thing I'll mention very briefly is that we've mentioned this in past podcasts concerning this topic. So you can head over to my website, legacyandfaith.com. You can get past podcasts there. But the other thing is that it is very traditional to say, I want a doctor to examine me and make a determination of whether or not I am able to manage my financial life. But I've talked at length that maybe my doctor doesn't know me. As a matter of fact, I've been married for 27 and a half years. So my wife knows me far better than any doctor ever will. And where is her voice if I just give all power and authority to a doctor to make this critical decision? So again, I'm comparing a financial power of attorney versus a trust. And in a financial power of attorney, I have never seen a financial power of attorney do anything other than say a doctor is to examine me and make the determination that I cannot manage my money. In a trust mechanism, we can set up a family meeting. We can set up other voices of individuals that you trust to make this very, very critical decision, which is, I'm going to take away all power and control is what the document is doing. Mm. And so instead of resting within a doctor-driven system, I'm not saying doctors are don't have a voice and don't have a place, but I'm saying that other family members, you may want them to be a part of this critical decision. And inside a trust, we can create different boards. We can create different voices to input into this decision. So we have two major issues that we've already covered, which is number one, we can have a different way to make the determination you need assistance. And then number two, we can ensure that the trusted voices in your life are not lost through a trust mechanism.
The Living Trust sounds like a much more comprehensive way of dealing with these questions when you become disabled or incapacitated. And some portion of your life and you want to make sure things are taken care of properly. People, again, how do they find out more about your services, Paul?
Yeah, if you want to communicate with us, if you think you need assistance, head over to our website, legacyandfaith.com. There's ways to communicate with us, educational shows coming up, and like I just mentioned, past podcasts at legacyandfaith.com.
Back with more of the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant in just a moment.
Hi, this is Paul Grant with the Legacy and Faith Show. Hosea 4:6 says, "My people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge." God's people need to be fully prepared in managing their finances and ensuring that their wealth is properly transferred. It is our passion to bring this knowledge to the body of Christ. If your church would benefit from having a financial and estate session that is biblically based, then I encourage you to reach out to us so that we can help design and implement a specific and strategic session for your church. Or if you are interested in estate planning services, then I likewise encourage you to reach out to us. You can go to legacyandfaith.com and receive all the information you need. Again, go to legacyandfaith.com.
Your photos, slides, scrapbooks, and home movies are invaluable and irreplaceable. Barry Kenny here with the Bear Services. Call us to save them as digital files to be stored electronically and shared liberally. We will even come to you so they stay in your possession. Go to thebearservices.com for more information. That's thebearservices.com.
We now return to the Legacy and Faith Show, featuring estate and tax attorney Paul Grant, and continue today's practical discussion to apply biblical principles for kingdom purposes.
I'm with co-host Mark Holland, Legacy and Faith Show this week, wrapping up our series on disability and incapacity. When that happens in your life, what's the best way to take care of that? And the differences between just the old-fashioned power of attorney versus using a trust to help you with some of these decisions.
Yeah, there's a lot of different things that a trust can do that I believe is far more protective for the one who is helping you and also more protective for you as the creator of the document. And my job as an attorney, when you walk into my office, is to first protect you. That is my sole and absolute job. My attention is at my client. What is in your best interest and how do I protect you to the greatest degree? Now, when you pass away, now I can turn my attention towards resolving your estate and actually creating a system to protect future generations or your kids, but not until you have passed away. So one of the biggest things that that I think is maybe missing in specifically just using template documents. So please don't ever use just a template document. If you're trying to do this on yourself by yourself and going online, there are just so many pitfalls, so many things that the average individual doesn't know to even ask, that using template documents and or using simple documents or online documents, this business of caring for you, you are worth so much more than just a simple template.
Is that better than nothing, though? Because, again, half the people don't do anything.
I agreed. You are 100% correct. So would I prefer that somebody has a crappy document versus no document? Yes, because at least it shows some intent. Okay. At least you had the ability to name an individual to care for you. That is superior than having nothing to where we're ending up in court. But unfortunately, even those documents oftentimes don't give much thought. They're built off of presumptions. And so they actually can oftentimes create huge messes. And it's just really unfortunate. But yes, I would always prefer to see somebody walk into my office with something than nothing. So I agree with you. Absolutely. But there is something far better than just doing it. I'm using air quotes. You can't see me, but just doing something or having some basic document. It is insufficient to do a document. It is better to do something that is more full, that will ensure your safety. So that's my job. My job is to take care of you, ensure your safety. And I have a very difficult time. The longer I do this, it's more difficult for me that that what I see the weaknesses in utilizing wills and powers of attorney are such gaping holes that I can't fix them. So in almost every situation, almost, okay, so I'm trying to be inclusive of everybody here, but I prefer to a large degree to utilize a trust-based system to ensure the safety of my clients and to preserve wealth being transferred for generations thereafter. So we've talked about two things that can help fill in the gap. Number one, helping other people in the process of determining you need help, because this is a big deal. Taking all your power and control. Does a doctor do it? Does family do it? Do groups do it? How do we determine that you need assistance? And then number two, ensuring that the voices that have always been with you continue to be with you. So those are a couple issues right out of the gate that we've covered. So let's move on to a couple other ideas.
Okay.
Another place that many powers of attorney don't address, some do, but some don't, is how about gifting? So if I have children, which I do, so my girls are 22 and 23, and if you have children in the same age range, or if you have had children that are older, you know that in this age group, maybe you even have grandchildren right now that are in this age group, you know that young 20-year-olds are still highly dependent upon their parents oftentimes. And it's not just I kicked them out at 18 and they should be an adult now. And specifically, I think that there is a trend in society, whether you like it or not, that more assistance is needed for a longer period of time. And so if I became incapacitated, if I was having problems to where I couldn't manage my money, most powers of attorney address one person and one person only. Now, who do you think that person is?
Probably the spouse.
Well,
no.
See, you're married, and if your spouse is listening to this, she's going to be greatly appreciated. No, it deals with you, the person who the documents dealt with.
Right.
It actually doesn't deal with the spouse. It actually does not deal with supporting other individuals who need your assistance. Mm. The times I've seen it is when there's a clear special needs child and a power of attorney has been dealt with because there is someone else that absolutely relies upon you. But what if your 30-year-old child is having a financial difficulty? Would many parents, most parents, step up to the plate if they are able and assist and lend help to children? Well, the answer is yes, of course. What if another family member was having problems financially and you were in a place to where you would assist? Many people would say, well, yes, I would want to help family members if that was the case. How about if you are a tither, which as believers in Christ, then I believe that that should be a value that we carry. I think it's a biblical value that we are generous, that we give. It starts with tithing, and then we give offerings. How about the notion that you would like to continue that regular habit of giving to continue if you were unable to make the decision? Would that be a value of yours? And many, many Christians that I meet say, yes, absolutely. I want to make sure that the generosity of my life continues. So we have a couple gaps then, at least from what I've seen. And look, what I'm talking about is my experience in helping people, and they bring me documents that I see in the marketplace. And those documents come from a myriad of different places. They come from other states. They come from other attorneys. They come from downloads. They come from standard documents. They come from all over. And what I'm addressing here is that what I review is it rarely, if ever, a very, very small percentage of the time. And again, typically only if there is a special needs child involved in the family. Has it ever dealt with, if my family needs assistance, I don't want to be so self-centric that I am disabled that I want, that I forget that other people may need my assistance and I have the ability, or that would be my value. Mm. So most powers of attorney are very, very focused on the creator and the creator only. The detriment of even including spouses, yeah. like you mentioned, that mm-hmm. was your first instinct. Mm-hmm. That's a great instinct, mm-hmm. but you're right. And then children and other family members. So all of these other people are lost, and a trust accounts for these. Or again, remember what I said, they should account for these. Most trusts that I've reviewed don't do it either, which is unfortunate. Yeah. But this is the biggest part of where we are heading as society. We are heading into a time and a place where disability, incapacitation, your life being extended, but not the quality of your life. And we need to address these issues. So we have this 5-part series is dealing with this. Head over to our website, legacyandfaith.com. Listen to these things. Get in touch with us. We need to make sure that your life first is protected, that you are going to be well taken care of, that those that you love and care for are taken care of. And in my experience, most documents just simply don't cut it. And we need to fix this as soon as possible.
Okay, how to deal with disability and incapacity, because we do live so much longer these days. It's a very important issue to consider, and consider a trust to help you with this. Again, legacyandfaith.com for more details and ways that you can be helped by the services of Paul Grant, estate and tax planning attorney. Another great edition of the Legacy and Faith Show here on KCIS.
Thank you for joining us for the Legacy and Faith Show. You can find more information about the show and Paul Grant at legacyandfaith.com. Join us next week at the same time as we learn to build God's kingdom and continue our journey on how to protect wealth and family values for generations. All discussions on the Legacy and Faith Show are intended to be about general legal issues. If a situation applies to you, then we encourage you to seek specific legal advice. Please do not rely upon any discussions from this program in place of having a personal relationship with your attorney. Any listener question that may have been answered also does not constitute legal advice and does not establish a client-attorney relationship.